You are listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, you're hearing it. In heaven, there is no beer, but we drink it here, and that's what we're going to do. We've got Chris Fornari with us right now in the studio. He's the editor of Brewbound.com. They're part of BevNet, and he is going to take us through the year in beer, a look over back at 2012, some of the big stories and great beers that came out this year. Chris, thanks for being with us here on Boston Public Radio.
Edgar, thanks for having us. We really appreciate it.
A good year for beer, generally speaking?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the story for the past few years now. 2012 was a phenomenal year as well. You know, some pretty outstanding numbers in terms of growth. The number of breweries that actually sprouted up this year, 376 new breweries was the last number that I had. That was from about a couple months ago. There's probably a few more that have...
That's just in 2012.
That's just in 2012,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's across the country? That's 300-plus?
Yes, nationwide. It's probably closer to 400 now, actually. That was a couple months ago. And these things are opening at about a rate of like 1.5 per day.
So are we seeing overall beer consumption go up, or are these guys eating into the Budweisers and the Millers of the world?
The overall volume is actually about the same. The domestic beer volume was down about 1.3% in 2011, and craft beer didn't quite make up all of that ground. You know, you could look at a number of factors, higher alcohols, you know, it just didn't quite make up all the volume. But there are, you know, an increasing number of craft beer drinkers in the segment now.
So it seems to be a sort of steady movement toward craft beer. That seems to be where beer drinking and consumption is going. You know, we live here in New England, so we certainly see it, but it strikes me that New England is particularly rich in terms of the craft beer movement. Is that true, or does it just seem that way because we live here?
Well, we are spoiled, yes. Yeah. There are a lot of breweries here. If I had to pick some regions around the country that are sort of the hotbeds of craft beer, you look at places like California, the Pacific Northwest, New England, even in Texas. They're all sort of these little pockets around the country. For the most part, the most craft beer typically tends to be consumed on the coast anyways.
Yeah.
So when you say New England, yeah, the coast. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So as you look sort of back over the year, are there sort of trends that you can spot? Were there some big stories that you saw float up? Are there things that somebody like you who's really in this world is seeing and saying, you know, this is meaningful, this is significant?
Yeah, I think there are some things that we've been looking at for the past couple of years. I think I wrote something in our BevNet magazine at the end of 2011 about some trends to look for in 2012.
You prove to be the Nostradamus of craft beer?
I don't know if I would go so far to say that I predicted anything. I don't have a crystal ball.
Or a beard.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that, you know, you look at cans. Cans are really popular. We got a couple here in front of us, obviously. Craft brewers are continuing to put their beer in cans.
I've certainly noticed this in stores. I mean, if I go into a package store, I go into a beer store, there are canned beers everywhere, tall boys and like sort of regular sized ones. What's the story here?
Well, here we go. We have Baxter in front of us here, Baxter Brewing. They're out of
Lewiston.
We've
got some beer, by the way, right in front of us here. I'm just those of you who are listening, you can't see this. Canned beer. Here we go.
So we got Baxter Brewing. They're out of Lewiston, Maine, just outside of Portland.
Okay.
And they started up in 2011, brand new company, but, you know, very aggressive. I think they produced about 5,000 barrels in 2011, which is pretty big. It was one of the largest launches in craft beer history.
Hmm.
This year they're going to do about 8,000 barrels. But you talk about cans. Why cans?
Yeah.
They articulate this pretty clearly on their can. It says, draft beer taste fit for camp, lake, barbecue, mountain, hike, picnic, beach, cooler, backpack, fridge, golf course.
Right.
You can take this thing anywhere.
So it's a lifestyle thing.
Yeah, and it can't get light struck, so the beer can stay fresher longer. The whole can thing really started with Oscar Blues. They're a Colorado brewery,
yeah,
and they were the first craft brewery to put their beer in cans, and I think that was back in the early 2000s, 2003, I want to say.
Has the technology changed? I mean, I was talking with some of our producers earlier today up in the newsroom, and I remember all of these ads for Keystone Light in the 90s, right? And their whole thing was bottled beer taste in a can. Avoid bitter beer face. You know, there was this stigma, this idea that for some reason, if beer was in a can, it wasn't going to taste as good as it is in a bottle. Has that changed, or is that just not true?
You know, I think there's sort of two camps. There's two schools of thought. Some people will say that it has a little bit of a metallic taste. Certainly, if you're drinking right from the can, you pick up a little of that metallic.
Yeah.
Do you drink these 22-ounce bottles out of the bottle? No, you pour it into a glass.
Yeah.
So it's still meant to be poured into a proper glassware.
Okay. So, but you're, and how about your personal take? You feel like you don't really taste the difference in terms of, like, it's either more bitter or more metally tasting or sort of, you know, flavorful?
I think there are probably styles that would stand up better in the can and be able to withstand some of that metallic taste. But again, if you're pouring it into a glass and you're sort of, it's like wine and you're letting it breathe, I think you're fine.
All right. So one of your trends that you saw in 2012 was a movement from bottles to cans. What else?
And not even just from bottles to cans. You know, people just – they produce in bottles as well as cans.
Yeah.
One of the other things that I noticed – I think it'll be a little bit bigger in the next, you know, year or two is gluten-free offerings.
Hmm.
There are just a ton of folks in this country that, you know, fall victim to celiac disease, and then just a ton of folks that for, you know, lifestyle reasons want to be more gluten-free. And the folks that couldn't drink beer before because of their celiac issues, they didn't really have many options. Now there's a few products on the market that are specifically crafted for those individuals. I can think of one, Omission, obviously clever naming, you know,
yeah.
Omission.
Yeah.
This is a sort of unique product because it's brewed by the folks at Widmer Brothers Brewing, and it's one of their new lines of beer.
Where are they?
They're out of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And what they did is it's one of the first beers that's actually crafted with malt, and then they extract the proteins, the gluten proteins, out of the malt.
Hmm.
And they're doing that with a special process or a chemical or something. But it has, you know, probably the closest taste to beer as opposed to being brewed with things like rice or sorghum or other things in substitute of malt.
How's the taste for you? I mean, when you taste this gluten-free beer, are you like, this is kind of beer, but there's something wrong over there? Or is it pretty close?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. They have two styles right now, I think like a pale lager and a pale ale. And they're pretty good for gluten-free beers, you know, for removing the gluten proteins.
All right. I'm talking with Chris Fornari. He's the editor of Brewbound.com. That's part of BevNet. He is a true beer insider, industry stuff, taste stuff, you name it. So we're talking about some of the trends that have been going on in 2012, looking back at the year in beer. We mentioned earlier we have some beer in front of us. You have sort of put together your sort of six-pack of choice of highlights from 2012, right?
Something
so,
like that.
We're gonna taste a little here and talk a little bit about some of your favorite beers here in 2012. Now, are these all local brews?
So what I wanted to do is I wanted to feature some of the more readily available brands in New England.
Okay.
And a lot of these guys are Massachusetts-based, or we got some folks from Maine, one from Vermont. But these are beers that you should be able to get your hands on, or at least brands that you should be able to get your hands on. So why don't we start with – we'll start in Massachusetts, and we'll start with – this is Notch Brewing. And now Notch, the founder of Notch is this guy, Chris Lowring, great guy. He basically came up with this concept to produce beers that were what he calls session beers. So below 4.5% for him. Some folks have a different definition of session, basically low alcohol beers that you can drink more of over a longer period of time.
So the idea that that's where the session name comes from is if you're having a session or you're a musician sitting around, they can drink it all night, or people sitting around, you can kind of drink and have a good time through the night and not get totally hammered, right?
Exactly. A drinking session.
Yeah.
So this is what we're drinking here. This is the Chernay Pivo. This is seasonal right now. It's one of my favorites. I think one of my favorites that he came out with this year is actually called Toffel Beer.
Okay.
And that was like 2.4% table beer, you know, something really flavorful and low alcohol that you could drink for a while. But this Chernay Pivo, this is sort of a darker lager. It's great for, you know, the winter time and 4%. I mean, you could drink this thing all night.
All right. Cheers. Let's give it a shot here. Yeah, so what we're looking at here, it's a dark beer, so maybe the color of a Guinness, but certainly not that thick consistency.
Exactly. And you get a lot of like roast and chocolate mm-hmm. notes out of this one.
Very wintry, very, very warming of the heart.
Yeah, exactly. I was having a couple of these last night, actually, over at one of my favorite bars in Boston, Eastern Standard.
Nice. That's a great beer bar.
Yeah, they have a lot of good bottles. They only have 4 taps, and they curate it really well, and Notch Chernay is on tap over there.
All right. I like it. This gets the seal of approval from me. So this is if you are a dark beer drinker and don't want to get that heavy feeling, you want to be able to drink a few of these, this looks like your beer. Session beers, not just by Notch, but that's I think that's another thing that I've certainly seen trending. How come that's becoming popular?
I think people are starting to realize that drinking 8.5-9% beers can be quite challenging if you're staying out all night.
Yeah.
While some of those beers are very very good to drink and try and sample, you just can't have more than a couple and be able to walk a straight line out the door.
Yeah.
And so you're seeing a lot of brewers at least add 1 or 2 beers, you know, to their line that has a ton of flavor like all their other beers, but is, you know, 4-4.5%, something that their consumers can drink a lot of.
All right. I'm talking with Chris Vernari, editor of Brewbound.com. They're part of BevNet. We're going through the year in beer. He sort of put together a 6-pack of his favorite local brews or some local brews that he's recommending that you can get your hands on. What else do you have here in front of us?
All right, we'll stay in Massachusetts, and we'll stay dark as well. This is the Smoke and Dagger from Jack's Abbey. They're in Framingham.
Like the name, Smoke and Dagger.
Yes. Very clever. Now this won a medal at the Great American Beer Fest this year.
And I mean, you see a lot of times. I mean, you go into a beer store, you've got all these beers that say that they've won medals, they've won awards. Is that particular medal, is that particular award, is that one that is, like, notable? Is that, like, one of the ones where you're like, that's a legitimate prize?
Yeah, the Great American Beer Fest is it's put on by the Brewers Association. It's one of the more legitimate medals that you can receive. They have a rigorous tasting panel process. Let's see. I actually got some numbers here from the Great American Beer Fest this year. 578 breweries poured 2,700 different styles of beer this
wow.
year. And there were 50,000 attendees, and the event sold
50,000?
50,000. It's over 3 days, multiple sessions in Denver. The event sold out in 45 minutes online.
Wow.
So that should give you a little bit of a clue of what kind of like what we're witnessing here in craft beer. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. And this one won.
This one won a medal. I think it was in the you'll have to ask the guys from Jack's Abbey, but I think it was in the smoked beer category.
All right.
So, you know, pitted up against, you know, a lot of brews from around the country. And these guys came out as one of the top 3 best.
All right. Here we go. We're going to try some Smoke and Dagger. Again, good roasty, more smoky than the Notch that we just had.
Yeah,
you can taste that smoke.
The Notch is going to be a little bit more sort of chocolate forward. This one's going to be a little bit more smoke forward.
Good though.
But again,
still
a black
dark
lager.
And thin. It's not thick. You don't feel like it's going to be sitting there in your stomach. What's the alcohol content on this one?
Let's see. This one is 5.8%.
So a little bit stronger.
A little bit stronger.
All right.
And the cool thing about Jack's Abbey is they're doing all lagers. And lagers take a little bit longer to make, which is why you see more American breweries doing ales, because they can turn it over in about a month's time.
Yeah.
Lagers take a little bit longer, sometimes up to 6 weeks. But they're doing all lagers. It's pretty cool. Those are some cool guys.
All right. We like it. So I'm calling you 2 for 2. What do you got now, number 3?
All right. Should we stay in Massachusetts? You want to move out? Let's see here.
I'm deferring to you.
Let's go up to Maine right now.
Excellent.
And let's
get some listeners up there in Maine. If you're listening up in Maine, we're coming to you.
Yeah. Let's go with the Rising Tide Daymark. This is a pale ale that they brewed. It's an American pale ale made with rye. And rye's been really popular this year, actually.
Yeah.
You see it in whiskeys and bourbons. You see it in beer as well.
Yeah, you see these rye lagers and these rye ales.
And they're brewing this pale ale with rye.
Okay.
We actually had this on tap at our office for a little bit. It's pretty good. I like this stuff.
I'm sorry. Just say that again. You had this on tap at your office.
The secret's out. we have...
You guys hiring?
Yeah, we were actually. You just missed it.
Ah.
We don't have all this fancy equipment, though.
All right. So it's a trade-off.
So we did install the, you know, we got to be legitimate if we're running a beer operation. So we have eight taps, and we like to feature mostly local stuff.
That's cool. All right. So let's give this a taste here. This is a lighter, more golden color here.
Yeah, and this will be a little bit more hop forward than the last two.
Okay.
Let's give it a try.
Let's give it a taste. Yep, it's got that that slight bitterness that comes with the hop flavor, but not as not as aggressively hoppy as you see. Like hops for the, you know, I start to see it in my sort of unscientific opinion. I think the hops thing has crested, right? Because for years past, I just people like, I love hoppy beer, hoppy beer, hoppy, hoppy, hoppy. It's still out there, but I'm seeing it sort of pull back a little bit. Is that true or am I totally wrong?
You're close. IPAs, actually, this year, the IPA category, it blew up. I mean, if there was a year for IPAs, it was 2012. You see folks like Stone Brewing doing their freshness beer program where they're rolling out an IPA called Enjoy By, and they only roll it out to specific markets, and they got this whole social media thing going with it too. But the idea is you have to enjoy it by a certain date. So the last one they did for Massachusetts was actually Enjoy By 1221.
Okay. By the end of the world.
Exactly. Enjoy before you're dead.
Yeah. Which is good advice.
So the hops are, you know, the hop heads, they're still craving, you know, really highly hopped, higher ABV hoppy beers.
When you say ABV, that's alcohol by volume?
Alcohol by volume, yes. Now, I actually do got some statistics here about hoppy styles. Now, this is from Nielsen, and this is from an industry group. They comprise data. You know Nielsen. I mean, they do TV and radio as well.
Yeah, they just purchased Arbitron, who used to do radio ratings. So they're in the radio ratings business fully now, too.
So some interesting stats from them. 50% there's 1,400 new craft SKUs in off-premise accounts. And those are not bars. Those are package stores and stuff. Mm-hmm. That was 1,400 new craft SKUs. I think that was over the past 3 years. 50% of those are seasonals and hoppy styles. So 50% of the beer still being consumed now, a lot of it's hoppy beer.
Wow. So still happening, the hoppy beer thing.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm talking with Chris Fornari. He's editor of Brewbound.com. They're part of BevNet. We're talking the year in beer, and we're tasting some of his choices from a six-pack of highlights he's put together of local beers that that he recommends, some new for 2012, some just kind of old favorites. We're running short on time, so let's maybe talk about the three beers you have left, and maybe we can taste one more.
Okay. So the three beers, I'll do this really quickly. Sitting in front of me, I mentioned Baxter Brewing. One of my favorite beers that they made this year was Celsius Summer Ale. Obviously not around now. Mm-hmm. We're in winter, but they got Phantom Punch Winter Stout. They're out of Maine. They're a great brewery.
That's one of the canned beers that we were talking about.
One of the canned beers. Another is Backlash. They got this great series. They're putting out four beers in this series.
Where are Backlash from?
They're from Massachusetts. They're actually here in Boston. They're a contract brewery, so they brew out of Paper City in Holyoke.
What does a contract brewery mean?
It's basically they rent space. So they don't own their own tanks or their, you know, canning or bottling equipment.
Okay.
They go somewhere else. They rent time in the brewery. They make their beer. They bottle it. And young guys, I think 25, 26 years old, Helder and Maggie, and they do some great beer. And this is War, their rye farmhouse ale. This just came out. This is brand new as of like about a month ago.
Okay.
I really like this beer. Got that one. And then, you know, sort of a new to Boston beer this year was The Alchemist, Heady Topper. And if you go on some rating sites like Beer Advocate or Rate Beer, Heady Topper is the number one rated beer right now on Beer Advocate. Beer Advocate, those guys are also based in Boston.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, this is good. Now, this is going to be your hoppy beer that you were talking about.
Okay.
This is going to be your highly, highly hopped, aggressive hop beer.
In a can.
In a can.
Golden in color. Let's give it a shot. Very hoppy.
Yes.
Aggressively hoppy.
Yes.
But good.
Double IPA. It's good.
Yeah. It's straight up good beer.
Yeah.
Interesting packaging. You've got a silver can, but not your, it's not your Coors Light silver. It's a black and silver thing going on there.
Yeah, and you got this guy getting all heady from how much beer he's drinking.
So
on
is
there.
this is a stronger beer?
8%, yeah.
8%, so much, much stronger.
And it comes in a 16-ounce can. Yeah, 16-ounce can, too. So you got to be careful when you're knocking those back.
All right, good advice there from Chris Fornari, editor of Brewbound.com. They're part of BevNet. Thanks for taking us through the year in beer.
Thank you.
That was Boston Public Radio's Edgar B. Herwick III. Oppan Gangnam Style. If you don't recognize this song, that means you missed one of the biggest pop culture phenomenons of 2012. What else made pop culture history? I'll be bringing you that story next. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio. Gangnam Style.